one of the few positive things that's come out of the pandemic is that it has de-shamed needing help, and it has exposed people to all these different tools on how to ask for help and get help, which is, I think, what we want to talk about now.
That's interesting. And I would say, just from my viewpoint or vantage point, that there's probably still room to go there.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah, in terms of like de-shaming. I think people are in need and know that these platforms exist, but are still very much afraid to utilize them, even though, from what I've seen, they're really helpful.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. Today, we're talking about asking for help. So the whole idea behind this podcast is to explore the intersection of life and money, as you just explained. And this is one of those intersections, one of those moments that can be really challenging, whether you're the person asking for help or you're the on the other side, being asked for help. There's no real easy answer, but we can definitely speak from our own experience and offer some help to our listeners.
And just to set the tone here, we're talking specifically about financial help, although some of our advice can be applied to any kind of help.
Life
help. But financial help can come in a lot of different forms. I think people tend to think of it and reduce it to just loaning or giving away money, but it could also be co-signing on a loan or being on a reference on an application for a job or an apartment.
I would even add just being a role model or, you know, dare I say, like teaching or, you know, just sort of offering like some consultation for someone who's struggling with something and say, hey, well, if this is your problem, have you thought about XYZ?
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to just asking for money or asking anyone for money. There's a lot to cover in this topic, but I will say one of the things I want to discuss right off the top is how frequent people ask us specifically for help.
And the answer for financial help.
For financial help. And the answer to that question is not often, like almost never. And I think that's important to call out because when I think about our broader mission, which is inspiring better conversations about money, I've learned that one of the reasons people don't talk about money, especially if they're doing well, is because they think they'll be flooded from people and friends and strangers who are in need. And that certainly hasn't been our experience. We've been talking about money openly and out loud, in person and on the internet for almost 5 years now. And I can only think of a handful of times where anyone has asked me for money. I don't know about you, but it certainly isn't something that happens that often. And the reason why I share that is because I truly believe there are people who don't talk about money or don't share some of the lessons that they learned because they think they are in some ways inadvertently inviting people to ask them for more money or to ask them. Yeah. Like, would you agree?
Yeah. I think the kids call it pocket watching, where and it actually makes sense. Like, I try very hard not to judge other people because I know that social media isn't real to highlight, but it makes intuitive sense that people would make snap judgments based off of what they see.
Yeah.
And the likelihood that you're going to be hit up when it's time to fundraise or when someone's in a pinch is likely higher if you make it seem like you have a bunch of cushion and that you just, you know, got money to literally throw.
Yeah. But I think that's a little different. That makes sense. You know, I think people are deathly afraid of talking about money and sharing these examples because they don't want to have the confrontation with a loved one.
Yes.
You know, and again, everyone's
family is different.
Or they
don't want to feel used.
Right.
Like, I've seen that among my single friends where like some men will be very shy to share their, you know, assets, using air quotes, because they think that it will attract a certain woman.
Right.
But it's like, I don't know. That's not how that works.
And if it does, I think you can pretty much tell that that's what got that person there. Yeah. So let's start with what to keep in mind if you're the person being asked for money. I think it's fair to say that in general, you're under no obligation to say yes, meaning you have every right to say no. Now, with that said, given certain relationships, for example, we just recorded an entire episode about financially supporting my mom. They can be a little bit more delicate to deal with, right?
And
we're certainly not suggesting that you just lay down the law and say no because Rich and Regular told you to say no.
You can say no.
You don't have to say yes. But, you know, if you do decide to say no, there might actually be some consequences that you have to deal with, but you'll figure out how to do that. We can't exactly tell you what you'll experience because everyone's relationships are different. But I think in general, most people are completely overthinking how complex that exchange goes. If it's never happened to you, I'm telling you, you're likely overthinking how volatile that situation might be. So in most cases, you can say no and people leave it alone.
And the reality is, if you are imagining a volatile situation or you have experienced one, that situation was likely going to be volatile whether you said yes or no. It just depends on who's experiencing the volatility, right? So if you had said yes and that person didn't have a reaction, you would have all this internal volatility about your decision, second guessing, like, I shouldn't have said that. I don't feel good about it. I needed that money. And if you say no, it just kind of externalizes the situation. But like, if there's volatility, the money is just going to bring it out one way or the other.
That's very, very true. Okay. So the second quick point here is, even if you give, you don't have to give a lot or the full amount that someone is asking, right? You can offer what you have available. So if someone asks for $500, you can say, I can give you 50. Or if someone asks for $1,000, you can say, I can give you 50.
That's five on it.
Totally up to you. You know, we were talking to a friend the other day, a friend who will remain nameless, and we were talking about a potential collaboration, and he wanted to do it, but he was admittedly hesitant because he'd had an experience with a family member, someone who'd helped him when he was younger, but now that he was doing well and relatively vocal about it, it was his uncle asked him for $13,000 to do something. And he was like, no, like absolutely not, for a variety of reasons. All that to say, he did not have a healthy relationship with his family member. He just flat out said no. He was frustrated and kind of holed himself up. Like, they had pretty much stopped doing what he was doing because he didn't want to go through that experience again. And I just had to remind him. I was like, you know, there's a way to kind of meet him in between and say, hey, you can give, and I appreciate what you did for me, but I can't give you $13,000.
Right. I think your last point highlights something that we talked about briefly in a previous episode, which is an implied expectation of support, or even that you owe somebody for deeds that they've done for you in the past. In other words, like, people don't always ask for help. They just assume that you gonna help and hold you to it. I think if they ask, you're right. And it's always helpful to have your line ready for when you want to say no. There was a time in my life where I was consciously trying to consume less alcohol. And so I had set a rule for myself that I wouldn't have more than a certain number of drinks. And when people would push and say, why aren't you drinking more? Do you want another drink? My go-to line would be, I told myself that I would only have two. That's a line that I had practiced over and over again. Instead of just saying no, I would default to, I told myself I would only have two. And that would actually lead to more of a conversation about my goals and why I told myself I would only have two, versus like the desire to keep pushing or to get defensive if I had just been like, no, like, leave me alone. So I think if they ask, there's ways to prepare for it. But in cases where someone isn't asking and it's just kind of expected, you will waste a lot of energy trying to change their expectation.
Yeah.
So instead, what I would recommend is that you focus on creating a boundary for yourself. And a boundary in this context just simply means, what are you going to do if and when it happens?
I love that. I remember shortly after we started combining our finances and we were going line by line, and we set a budget for giving every single month. And that budget was $50. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a lot, but given, to your point, the goals and objectives that we had, which was to be aggressive about getting out of debt and investing at a high and consistent rate, that was how much we were comfortable setting aside. And I remember looking at that number and feeling like, all right, that's not a lot. But we also treated it almost like a line item that accrued over time.
Yes.
And so if we didn't give $50 in January, then that sort of rolled over and we could give $100 in February. Mm-hmm. So I think that's certainly something that people should consider. And by taking that approach, it almost gave us a feeling of as if we weren't just setting aside money to give. It was almost like we were giving a strategic charitable donation to someone in our life. And it gave us an opportunity to choose, you know, which causes or, you know, households we felt like supporting, or which one we felt would be the best use of our money.
Yeah, I remember when we were doing that and when we had a very fixed budget, and it actually became easier to say no once we started talking about money online because people already knew where we stood. It was like, you know, we budget every dollar because of these goals.
Right.
That money is already assigned. Like, I ain't got it. All I got is, you know, this $50. So take it or leave it.
I think there are people in our lives, I won't name them, but literally know that. I think we wrote a blog post, something around $50 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about giving. It was about investing, actually, at the time. Because
right.
quite honestly, there were several really affordable funds that you could buy at $50. And the point we were making is, hey, if I invested that $50, it would grow to a large sum of money over a long period of time. And so that was really the point that we were making. But anyway.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, setting aside that budget or making it a line item made the giving feel more like a strategic charitable donation.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of charity, I read an article earlier this year about how apps like Venmo and Cash App changed the charity model, which has been around for about 100 years.
Okay.
So I'll post it in the show notes, and hopefully it's not behind a paywall, but it's basically about how people use these apps to fill the gap of financial support during the pandemic because all of our institutions failed to do that, from government to employers to healthcare. All we had was each other.
Yeah.
And so a quote from the article says, "The coronavirus pandemic has mainstreamed a once radical form of charity or solidarity, depending on your politics and vantage point, in which strangers use peer-to-peer payment apps to give money directly and instantly to each other." Now, the article says it's impossible to tell how many Americans are giving through direct digital donations, but it guesstimates that informal giving now totals in the billions of dollars as many nonprofits struggle to keep their doors open. So this shift is actually returned to the old days. We're now giving directly to each other instead of using an intermediary organization like, you know, Red Cross or some other big
yeah.
nonprofit.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
I'm
thinking back even before the pandemic, just the frequency and how that differed over, let's say, 10 years ago. Well, they obviously didn't exist back then.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, when they did become available, how quickly and how popular they became. And I mean, I can remember off the top of my head at least 10 just in the last few months. How often or frequently would you say you've seen or are asked to contribute to an online fundraiser?
I see them every day.
Yeah.
I think my social circle is one that tends to amplify those causes a lot.
Yeah.
So in a lot of communities, they will share the needs of other people in the community. If you have extra dollars for groceries or for, you know, surgery or for any sort of other hardship,
mm-hmm.
Directly asked, it's typically only when I have a connection to the person in need. So it's, you know, a colleague, a coworker, a cousin of a coworker, something like that. I actually, it's funny you mentioned how quickly adoption for this new way of donating and giving took place. I actually read a book by one of the co-founders of Kickstarter, Yancey Strickland. And Kickstarter, for those that aren't familiar, is like the OG crowdfunding platform for creatives. But he talks about how crowdfunding is one of those ideas that seems so obvious now because it's what a lot of communities, particularly communities of color, have been
yeah.
doing because they've been denied traditional funding. But he talks about how obvious it seems now, but at the time that he was starting Kickstarter, he actually had to learn to talk about the idea in a way that people connected with it. Like, it was that foreign of a concept to people that you would give directly, possibly to strangers, to help them achieve whatever goal they have. And he says that the only people who like got it initially were creatives because they knew firsthand how tough it was to receive funding from traditional institutions.
Yeah.
And then you fast forward to the rise of like Cash App. I read an article that they owe their success to Southern rappers who started using it for their, you know, various transactions and putting it in songs. And so, again, they knew firsthand how difficult it was to do things the normal way or the traditional way. And so they were more willing to try this new way. And it just kind of took off the more they talked about it.
Wow.
Anyway, the article wraps up and says, you know, one of the few positive things that's come out of the pandemic is that it has de-shamed needing help, and it has exposed people to all these different tools on how to ask for help and get help, which is, I think, what we want to talk about now.
That's interesting. And I would say, just from my viewpoint or vantage point, that there's probably still room to go there.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah, in terms of like de-shaming. I think people are in need and know that these platforms exist, but are still very much afraid to utilize them, even though, from what I've seen, they're really helpful. You know, because you allow people to give, you allow your message to spread a lot more quickly, you allow anonymous people to give who, for whatever reason, are willing and are able, to do it. But I still think there are a lot of people who are hesitant to do it, largely because of the shame associated to it.
I think it's that and the disappointment of it not working. Like, you see it for working for other people, and maybe you've tried it and it didn't immediately work for you. So,
Okay. So that sounds like a great segue into the other side of the coin, which is asking people for money. If you're the person asking someone else for money, we've got a little bit of advice for you as well. The first, I would say, is put it in writing. I think it's easy to have the conversation, maybe grab a quick, 5 minutes with someone. But I do think that there's something to be said for putting these requests in writing. It acknowledges that when people get asked for money, that it can be difficult for them. So to help hold each other accountable, not just you, but the other person, you put it in writing and you say, hey, this is specifically how much I'm asking for. This is what I need it for. This is my plan for paying you back. And again, it doesn't have to be overly formal or a literal contract, but I do think that there's a seriousness that people take with putting things in writing versus just a quick ask, which you could very easily wiggle out of and, bounce into a separate conversation. It's like, oh, well, when I said,
No, I said, let me have $20. I didn't say, let me borrow $20.
You meant U.S. You said dollars. I didn't know you meant U.S. dollars. Yeah. Put it in writing. You get specific. And I think, it sort of helps to hold both sides accountable. The second thing I would say is to bear in mind that if someone says no, it doesn't mean that they don't love you or appreciate you. They're entitled to say no. As we said earlier on in this episode, I use us for an example. You might assume that we're doing well, and if you ask us for money, that certainly we are able and or willing to do it. But you may not know that, hey, maybe my mom is sick. Mm-hmm. Maybe both of our parents are sick. Maybe she just had surgery. Maybe last month, because spring started happening in Atlanta and all the pollen kicked up, which triggers our son's asthma, we've been in urgent care several times, which is a very real thing for us. And those things oftentimes have financial implications. If at the same time you're in need and I didn't publicize that, on social media, you may not necessarily know that that particular month we're actually pretty cash strapped and unable to help you. Right. That doesn't mean that I need to explain that to you. For a variety of reasons. And the same could be true for anyone. You could be dealing with things that you don't necessarily share. So just some quick tips. One, put it in writing. I think it helps to formalize the ask and help to create some accountability on both sides. And the second one is to try your best not to take those things personal if someone says no.
Yeah. And no is a complete sentence, but when I was researching for this episode, I did learn that a lot of people are motivated to give when they realize the urgency of the situation.
Yeah.
And so if you're the person in need, if there's a way to articulate the urgency, again, without being emotionally manipulative or deceptive, just articulating the urgency might increase your chances of getting a yes. So, for example, if you needed help covering an application fee for an apartment that you're trying to move into, you might say something like, hey, Julian, the reason I need help is because the deadline to apply is July 1st and I don't get paid until July 4th. And because my rent also comes out on the 1st, I'm a little short. I also agree to your point that there's something to having a written record of the transaction, even if it's just via text or, hell, you can use a little comment line in the app itself. Just be aware that if your profile is public, there are creepy people who love to read those for fun.
Cash App.
Venmo. Oh. Cash App has one too, but there's a whole group of people called Venmo voyeurs. People who creep and read all the reasons that people exchange money and develop like storylines in their head.
Oh.
They call these public displays of transactions. And If you're one of those people, I don't mean to call you creepy. No, it is a little creepy, though.
That's a little creepy.
But, like, they'll just endlessly scroll through Venmo and figure out all the reasons why people exchange money and come up with, like, their own little, you know, like, looking through somebody's window.
Wow.
Yeah. So either make your...
I think I say this every other episode.
My rabbit holes.
I do not understand where you find these weird corners of the internet. It is your special gift. Congratulations.
Moving on.
All right. Third tip is to be clear on if you're asking for a gift or a loan. I think there's a tendency for people who need a true gift, but try to frame it up as, you know, man, I'm going to pay you back, man.
Yeah, you ain't going to pay me back.
No, yeah. Well, and let's, you know, we're joking about it. But I mean, the reality is if you're in a tight situation and you can't afford to make whatever bill or cover whatever it is, there's a reason why you can't do that, right? This is likely a chronic situation. Mm-hmm. So the notion that you would even be able to pay it back somehow is really kind of a hope, right? So let's not build that into the ask. If what you're asking for is a gift or something to just help make this problem go away, then ask for that.
Right.
But if you tell me that it's a loan, or if you ask someone for a loan, their expectation is going to be that you pay it back.
Yes. Today, at my big age, like at this stage in life, I treat all loans as gifts. I hope for the best, but I assume the worst. Shout out to episode 11. Anticipating your worst case scenario. Shameless plug. But yeah, if it's a loan, be upfront about the payback terms and your likelihood to meet them. Be honest and vulnerable. To finish the example earlier, if you know you get paid on the 4th, but it would be a real stretch to turn around and give Julian his application fee money back, then just say that. You can say something like, look, Ju, I get paid on the 4th and on the 18th, and between those two checks, I can probably pay you back the application fee. Worst case scenario, you'll get all your money back in July. But like having that conversation is a far more honest and transparent way of asking for money than pretending like all of a sudden on the 4th, you don't have bills anymore.
Yeah. I'll also say this. I'm probably not the person to ask for money, especially if you're going to be vague about the reason. So to your point, be specific, because if I then have to ask you for the details, that's telling me that you really haven't given this any thought, or that you really don't have any plans to actually pay me back.
This is a polarizing topic because a lot of people feel like if I ask you for money, you just need to know that I need it and you don't need to know why.
I think that is true for elders.
Established relationships.
Well, I'm specifically thinking elders.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, because there's a whole generational thing there. You don't ask. If I ask, there's an expectation, you know, it is what it is. Like, I don't have to tell you. You should just give it to me because at some point I put powder on your butt. That's the thing.
I don't know why I started thinking about the carcinogens and baby powder when you said that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
And that's when you bring up the fact that was actually a violation. Oh, gosh. You find humor in horrible things.
I know.
Okay. So I also think we should talk about alternative solutions before asking people for money. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple of options here just in case you haven't thought about these and you're in that situation. The first one is a credit card transfer. So you can transfer a balance from one card to another card with, let's say, a lower interest rate, or if you're lucky, a 0% interest rate, which essentially buys you some time. And if you can't find one of those offers, you might actually be able to call and negotiate one of those offers with your existing or a new credit card company. So that's certainly an option to consider.
And the point of that would be so that you have room to put whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You might be able to essentially say, hey, I can't pay all of my bills. And so one of the things that you can do is try to put an existing bill, like a credit card bill, on pause in a way by transferring that balance from one card to another.
Okay.
The second one is an amazing tool called PayActive. This is essentially technology that employers can use or plug into that makes certain benefits available to employees. And the primary benefit is it gives workers access to the funds that they've earned in their paycheck prior to their payday. So if you get paid on the 14th and your employer uses Pay Active and passes on those benefits to you, between, let's say, the 1st and the 14th, as you are working and earning income, assuming you have direct deposit, you can essentially check your Pay Active app or account to see how much you've earned throughout or in between those pay periods. And it actually gives you an opportunity to earn that income, basically cash your check or however much you've earned prior to your employer's scheduled payday. Uh-huh. So really, really excited about that technology. And it seems to be growing slowly but surely. If you're listening and you're in need, or you anticipate you might be in need, or if you know other workers who are in need, highly recommend asking your employer to connect with PayActive to make that functionality and those benefits available to everyone in your company.
Yep, that isn't a quick fix, but it does have long-term benefits, and it's completely free to your employer to get set up. But if that's not an option, maybe your employer isn't eligible or you don't have that kind of pull, I would advise that you look beyond brick and mortar banks. So a lot of us still have our money in traditional banks, and a lot of the newer online digital banks actually have programs that allow you to access your paycheck early. So it's not the same as PayActive, where you're accessing earned funds prior to payroll running. It's getting access to your payroll, your paycheck, a day or two before it actually hits your account. So a lot of these newer banks offer that as a service. They also carry less fees and sometimes offer cash bonuses for signing up or even referring your friends. So we'll leave a few of our favorites in the show notes. But I would also suggest that you take advantage of that.
Love it. All right. Third recommendation is stopping your retirement contributions. That probably doesn't feel good, and in some cases may not solve for cash in hand, let's say overnight. But if you're anticipating a shortage, that's certainly something that you can consider. And as soon as you're available to turn it back on, to start investing in your future again, then you can do that. We've actually had to do that before, so don't feel bad. Don't feel alone. But it's certainly available to you, and just want to make sure that you're keeping that in mind. Number four, another option is adjusting your tax withholdings so you have a larger paycheck. Similar to pausing your retirement contributions, if you can adjust your tax withholding, that means that the federal government or state government will take less income taxes out of your check. You can do that multiple times a year, by the way. You don't want to make a habit of it, because then it gets things really confusing. But that's certainly another option to allow you to have more of your take-home pay in the short run, to help solve for a shortage. And the last one is picking up the phone, negotiating lower payments or extensions with your lender, your landlord, or any credit card company. We've literally had to do this, it's been a long time since we've had to do that, but it works. And there are tons of people who do this on a regular basis. We didn't really get into that when we did the credit card hacking episode, but that's part of that world where people are picking up the phone and negotiating directly with credit card companies, because they know that those companies would rather give them an extension than lose them as a customer, or just lose out on the ability to collect on the debt as a whole. I will also say the IRS makes payment plans and repayment plans available to you as well. I have had to do that on a couple of occasions. And so it's nothing to feel bad about. Depending on how frequent or consistent your income is, this might be something that you do on a regular basis. But it's certainly something to keep in mind that if you owe and you can't pay your taxes, it's not like you just go to jail. You know, you can work out an agreement or payment plan with the IRS, and hopefully you can pay it off in full sooner rather than later. Can you think of any others?
Yeah, mine are probably quicker ad hoc solutions. Those were all really, most of them are legal. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. These are all legal. The ones that you suggested are great for long-term sort of building cushions. Mine are more like you need some money fast. So my first one is to sell something. And I recommend selling on a Facebook marketplace or an equivalent that takes location into consideration. So there's a couple of these like OfferUp, and there's a bunch of them. But I have used these to very quickly get rid of stuff. So there was a time where we had a glass table for our kitchen. And once we had a toddler, a glass table just was not a sustainable thing for us. So I needed to go buy a more sturdy table. And I put it on OfferUp. And within 2 days, somebody came and got the table.
It was also pretty loud.
Yeah, it was loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So little things like that where location, you're only talking to people within, you know, a drivable radius who are, if they're interested in your stuff, can come get it within a day or two, is all good stuff. I've sold baby stuff on there. Our Rich Journey, which is a YouTube channel, they're great at suggesting like going to IKEA to the as is section and flipping that stuff. Happens really quickly. So sell something. Second one is pick up a side hustle and preferably one with low barriers to entry so that you can start earning immediately. There are some side hustles that require you to go through like a training, a screening process, an orientation. And there are other side hustles that you can start as soon as your internet works and you've completed the paperwork. So look at the ones that have very low barriers to entry and start earning immediately. So the third one is get a cashback app on your phone. So similar to banks, these will sometimes have bonuses for signing up, but the idea is very similar to credit card points, where if you purchase certain things within your everyday purchases, you'll earn cash back and you can have some extra spending money.
Love it. Those sound legal.
I didn't say what you sell on Facebook Marketplace.
Oh, okay. Moving on. I do not want to know.
I sold a table, which is legal. And baby stuff.
All right. So asking for help. We've offered up some tips. What are your final thoughts?
My final thought is that help is not a four-letter word.
Fake news.
I mean, it is a four-letter word, but y'all know what I mean. I mean, in the sense that it's not a bad word. I'm actually going to read a quote from Mia Birdsong's book, How We Show Up, because she says it better than I could. But she says the lone wolf approach to life doesn't work for anyone because none of us are self-sufficient. Interdependence is part of who we are as people. We are fundamentally wired to need others. And if you think of help, asking for help and giving help, receiving and giving help, if you think of that as a fundamental part of what it is to be a human, it helps to take away some of the stigma and shame attached to doing it.
I love that. My final thoughts are asking for help is one of the toughest things any one of us will ever have to do, because in some ways it's an admission of failure or insecurity. But there's something you should keep in mind. And that's that the people that love you and who are close to you have likely seen the signs or can relate. So if you've already exhausted the options available to you, don't wait too long before you reach out and ask for a hand. In fact, you may prompt someone in advance of your breaking point. And if you're the person being asked for help, well, know this. It probably took a lot for someone to ask you. So be gracious. Be kind. At the same time, force them to be specific. The last thing anyone wants is for money to create a wedge between you and the other person or other people. So the more specific and explicit the terms, the less likelihood there will be for an issue to pop up.
Great. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. I'm going to take this moment to ask for your help. And if you liked what you heard, please leave us a 5-star rating and review.
I'll take some Cash App money too.
Or Cash App me. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks for listening.